For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, this one started with a picture. We did the Kevin Harlan podcast, visiting with him about his career, and then did a TV story as well. And Kevin sent me a bunch of pictures to use from his career, and a lot of great photos working with different broadcast partners. And one of the pictures he sent was with Bill Raftery. And I saw that picture. I'm like, man, I would love to get Bill Raftery on the Kilcoin Conversation, talk about his career, just fun-loving guy, obviously. Likes to have a good time, famous for that, famous for his late nights, even the night before a big broadcast. And I remembered meeting Raftery in Jupiter outside the Cardinals complex. He was walking in on an afternoon, and I'm like, oh my God, it's Bill Raftery. And he was meeting with the Cardinals trainer, Barry Weinberg, who was helping him out, shoulder injury or something, getting a little PT. And so I texted Barry Weinberg, and I said, do you think you can get me in touch with Bill Raftery? And he said, stand by. Linked us up. We started trading some texts and figured when it would work to do the interview. And I said, I'm a Marquette guy. And he said, oh boy, here we go. Al McGuire stories. Get ready. And he's exactly as I would have guessed. Funny, glib, even in just setting up the Zoom and trying to pull the whole thing off. He was making jokes. And we talk about how it all started in TV nearly 40 years ago. He'd been at Seton Hall for more than a decade, started coaching right out of college. He was actually drafted by the New York Knicks. So Bill Raftery was a really good high school player, was the all-time leading scorer for the state of New Jersey for years, decades, and then played at LaSalle, drafted by the New York Knicks in the 14th round, didn't end up making the team, starts coaching. And after a little while coaching, Dave Gavitt, the legendary founder of the Big East, said, you know what, you'd be great on TV. You get all these stories and funny sayings, and that's sort of how it started in TV, and it's gone from there. And pretty cool that as popular as Raftery is, it's still pretty rare when you're early 70s, they give you the main gig. I mean, he'd been on national television for years, but it was about 6-7 years ago, they paired him up with Jim Nance and Grant Hill and said, you should be calling the Final Four, the national championship. That just doesn't happen very often in the TV industry where they say, let's give it to a guy in his 70s. But he is, you know, he may be the answer to that question. A sportscaster who doesn't have any critics or people who dislike him. Maybe there's one or two out there, but man, it seems everybody loves Raf. Funny stories. We get into working with Jim Nance, working with Brent Musburger, some Al McGuire stories for sure. And just talking about his career, how it all started. Onions. Man, oh man, how it all started. Hope you'll enjoy this one as much as I enjoyed putting it together and talking with him. Bill Raftery on the Kilcoin Conversation, presented as always by Triad Bank. Keep an eye on these folks. I think you might start seeing a little more of Triad Bank. They started here in 2005, five-star rated bank. And because they're based in St. Louis, they're able to get things done in our town. So much of St. Louis is about who you know and connections. And Triad Bank, based in St. Louis, able to get things done for you. And I always mention it, when you walk into the lobby, there are people there, actual people, and they're friendly on top of it. Triad Bank, they're in Frontenac on Clayton Road, about a block west of Lindbergh, and also on the web at triadbanking.com. Appliance discounters, where they know all those cannots you get from the other guys that say, nah, we can't do that today or tomorrow. How about a month from now? How about 2 months from now? Why wait a couple of months when you can just get that appliance in a couple of days? That's what happens when you've got a 40,000-square-foot showroom like Appliance Discounters has. GE rebates, delivered soon. What more do you want? TheAppliancedIscounters.com is the website. Or stop by any of their great showrooms around the St. Louis area. Check out all the great General Electric merchandise by going online at TheAppliancedIscounters.com. Also, Marie DeVilla, one of our longtime sponsors. Just a great facility, but also really good people that have been running Marie DeVilla Senior Living for all these years. Fred and Mary Kay Wiesahan, great friends with Red Shandings, who lived at Marie de Villa for so many years and was on the board and helped make it what it is today, which is a premier spot for your senior years. Corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. You can also take a tour at mariedevilla.com. All right, let's get to it. The one and only Bill Raftery.
Coach, I'm curious how many people know about your playing career, because you were the all-time points leader, right, for the state of New Jersey. And if I read correctly, that record held for years. And I'm wondering, did a Hurley get you? Who got you eventually?
I have no idea. Well, John Smoji actually got me, who ended up at New Mexico and then Rutgers. And then his daughter got him, believe it or not. She was a great basketball player as well. But it proves I took a lot of shots and or the competition wasn't good. I'm not sure which. But no, that's a long time ago. It was, we had a great run. It was a little Catholic school that's since closed. And 3 of the 4 years, we were in the state final. We had a great high school coach who's still with us, too, in his 90s, Joe Palermo. But, now you're aging me thinking that far back, to be honest with you. But it was a great time and a great town to grow up in, Kearney, small town. And we had the benefit of competing with Hudson County, which is where Tommy Heinsohn came from, for example. That was our sort of area. So the competition there was phenomenal. And then we used to go to Essex, which is newer, and compete in those leagues. So that's really what made our high school team, guys stepping up, playing guys a lot better than we were, older than we were at times too.
And if I'm looking correctly, you started coaching, right, at a really, really young age. Was it right out of college?
No, well, it was, but what had happened was I went to the Knick camp in the summer, excuse me, and anyhow, they brought a couple of us back in the fall, and one day at lunch, the Turk showed up. Eddie Donovan wanted to see me, and he said, we don't have any room, but anyhow, so I went back. I was the director of recreation in the same hometown, and I was just, one of our workers was a soccer referee, and he had been had worked the game at Fairleigh Dickinson in Madison. And he said, the AD there is the basketball coach, soccer coach, lacrosse coach. And he was regretting that he had to start basketball. And I told him that you were home. So next thing I went part-time, went up and I took the job for 2 years part-time and then got a master's and did it for 3 full-time. So that's how it started, really. No ABA to go to. The only thing we had was the Eastern League, and it didn't seem to fit, for some reason. Physically, it was like an imposing league and, limited to that Pennsylvania, South Jersey area. And anyhow, it got me started early.
But for a kid from that area to even be drafted by the Knicks, 14th round, and back then, do they call your home or you get it?
No, I didn't even know about it, to be honest with you. I always say it was the 800th draft pick of the Knickerbockers. But in those days, there were only 8 teams. People forget that. And so basically, there were 80 guys in the country playing basketball. And, it was hard. The two big-time guards with the Knicks then, Tom Gola and Richie Guerin, are both in the Hall of Fame, and they were not a great team by the league standards in those days. The Celtics were ripping and roaring with Red Auerbach, was the dominant one, but there were limited horizons in terms of basketball. And I guess 2 years later the ABA started, but by that time I was entrenched pretty much in. I'm not saying I would have made one of the teams, but it probably would have been something I would have looked at. Europe was not a real factor in those days either. So, there were a lot of limitations.
So you played, you coached. Who finally said, this guy needs to have a microphone? This guy needs to be broadcasting. Who made that first decision?
Well, that's the genius of Dave Gavitt. Dave and I coached against one another. He was at Providence. He became the founder of the Big East Conference, and sort of a banquet story. I always say that Dave said, look, I've watched you coach for 11 years. You ought to get into broadcasting. And that's sort of it's close to the truth, basically, because the Big East formed. I was there 2 years. And I had said to Dave along the way, you know, someday, Dave was doing the color analysis, by the way. That's how it basically started. And he did not want to do it anymore, you know, because of obvious reasons, you know, whether it's favoritism or being accused of things. So I started my 12th year at Seton Hall. And on those days, you started October 15th. And on October 28th of that year, that we had 2 weeks of practice, Dave said, look, if you want to do this, you've got 2 days to let me know, because he didn't want to interview anybody. He wanted to get it over with. He didn't want to respond to all the inquiries and things like that. And that's how it started. So I left. And what's interesting, I left for 9 games, $700. Excuse me, 9 games, $800, $7,200 with 4 children. So, you know, I worked at Seton Hall, which was a Catholic school, you know, and they paid me in prayers and novenas. So it wasn't that big a fall down, you know. But at any rate, it was just one of those things. I knew we were not in position to do what these, you know, the Syracuse, Connecticut, and Georgetown, St. John's. I mean, they were in it, you know, in it to win it, as they say. But, you know, we still had a limited budget. Facilities were terrible. And unfortunately, PJ, who replaced me, Carlissimo, he was under the same, you know, problem underneath all these difficulties, because they didn't adjust much financially for him until the league stepped in and told them that they, you know, they've got to, you know, make sure they have all every, you know, conditioning, diet, you know, obviously a coach for the conditioning end of things, and update the facilities. And, you know, PJ, the first 3 years he struggled, and then the next 3 or 4 years he was in the NCAA in 89 in the Final Four. And that was Dave's dream, by the way. Seton Hall and Providence were the two teams that, you know, we struggled against those other teams. And Dave's goal was that someday every team would be in the Final Four. And in 87, Providence went, and 89, Seton Hall went. So that was one of his dreams, that, you know, there's going to be cyclical things happening, and you're not always going to be down at the bottom kind of a deal. And he was right, as it turned out.
And people don't realize the Big East, I mean, it was a phenomenon. I mean, I'm a kid in the Midwest, and I was either wanting to be Patrick Ewing or Chris Mullen or Pearl Washington. It depended on the day out on the backyard. But, I mean, that was Monday night, and it was – people don't realize that that was – maybe as good as it gets in terms of rivalries and intensity and just the star power. I mean, we could go down the line with the kids at Nova, and I mean, people, I guess it's legendary still. And I know they brought it back, and I'm a Marquette guy, so I'm glad they did bring it back. But that probably helped your star rise, right? Because the league was on fire.
Well, I never saw your game, but I don't think you were quite as good as Pearl and Patrick and Chris. Maybe I'm mistaken. But it was a first name league, you know, Louie, John, Jim, or Jimmy, depending on Boeheim or Calhoun, you know, Louie, Luigi, Rolly. And then, of course, the players, Eddie would be Pickney and Chris. Everybody got a first, you know, it was so well known. And Big Monday, you know, really the brainchild of both Dave and ESPN. And it's interesting, the marriage of the Big East was the advent of ESPN. That was where both of them, well, one needed product and one needed exposure. And then you go forward to the last few, 7 years now or 8 years, and same thing, Fox Sports One starts. And fortunately, the new Big East was beginning, and Fox was great to, you know, really build this name and label, and with Villanova winning twice. You know, obviously, if you're following the other teams, you wish your team had won it. But I think it gave it great credibility when Villanova won.
And Coach, you've worked with a lot of different people. Give me some thoughts as I rattle off some names. How about Brent Musburger? You guys worked together back in the day, right?
Oh, a lot of fun. A lot of fun. He'd fight you for a bottle cap on the golf course. He was I was lucky to do games with him in the NBA. And, you know, you've heard stories about different guys. And we had a Saturday, Monday ball game with the Piss the Bad Boys. And it was the early days of the Palace. And the audio was just terrible, where he used the spare. That didn't work. Then he used mine. So I was off the air for the whole quarter. And after the game, I mean, the Palace always had these bugs with the audio at the beginning. And I remember him saying to the audio guy, look, I know you guys have really worked hard. If you could ever get it straightened out by Monday, I'd appreciate it. And I've heard guys really get after audio guys, as you probably have too. So there was a kindness about the guy. His recall, it was just amazing. You know, not comparing him with Jim Nance, but those two have amazing facility to reach back and astound you with their knowledge that is not on their notepad, or it's just something that they've retained over the years. But I always enjoyed Brent. He was always fun to be around. He was always upbeat.
And how about Jim Nance? You mentioned him. He seems to be the gentleman of sport. And I don't know if that's because we picture him at the Masters whispering, but he
right.
has this sort of genteel vibe about him. And I've never worked with him, so I don't know it to be true. What's
Yeah, no, that's exactly what he is. I mean, he's a real gentleman, just has a nice way and time for everybody. I mean, there's so many things he does that, you know, requests from people, anonymous people, whether it's a voiceover or, you know, a video. It's amazing the charities he's involved in. And he's a great teammate. You know, Grant and I have just enjoyed our relationship. As you know, you can tell when the team isn't getting along or it's just not the right mix. And he makes it go for us. I mean, he's just a pleasure to be around. I did his first game with CBS, and I also did his first studio. And unfortunately, I made him go out after both, and now he'll never go out with me because, he's got to maintain the great looks and appearance. But just a wonderful guy. He really is.
How about the energy of Gus Johnson when Fox put you two together? That's a lot of charisma in one broadcast.
Gustavo. What's interesting, he was actually friendly with my daughter. Our daughter Kelly was at CBS, so they've been friends. And he used to go to Chelsea Pier, and Kelly would take Billy, who you were on the phone with before we started. And Billy and Gus would play one-on-one. And Gus hates to admit it, but Billy used to beat him when he was in seventh or eighth grade. But Gus is like part of the family. I've known him. We worked together at CBS, and I'm just so happy for him and his career. There's a lot of good in him as well. And I think that's the one thing that you find out, that all these great announcers, I know you had Kevin on and other people, there's an innate quality about them that smacks of goodness. The old term, Chuck Daly used to say, he gets it. The guys we've mentioned and you've had on, they just get it. They just want to do the best job possible and, convey what transpired and obviously use their personality and educational background to make it work.
You were a well-known broadcaster, but when CBS and Turner said, we want you to do the Final Four, you need to be on the call for the biggest games of the year. What did that mean to you at that point?
Well, it's like anything. I've never coveted anything. Just put my head down and whatever happens, happens. And this was just an opportunity that, Sean McManus, obviously with CBS, and David Levy agreed that it would be a the proper move, let's put it that way. And I had done the radio for maybe 10 or 12 years before at the Final Four. So I knew the drill, which I think eliminated a lot of the unknown. If you had come in and not experienced all the commitments, without being on air, the responsibilities without being on air, it might be overwhelming. So I think that sort of made it a comfortable transition. And also, you know, working with Grant, who, you know, I got to know his family when he was at Duke. And of course, Jim, just, you know, having been a friend of his since 84 or 85, I guess, when he first started with CBS. So there was a lot of comfort zone. But, you know, it was a gamble for Sean. You know, there's so many other guys that are terrific that he could have asked to step in. And I just feel blessed that, you know, my number was called. And again, just put your head down and run with it until they pull the plug on you.
So would you have ever worked with Al McGuire, or I obviously crossed paths, but you guys never worked together, did you?
No, he's just something special. I did the banquet in 76 at Marquette, and I flew in and Rick Majerus was picking me up, and I was to be the guest speaker. And you know of Al and probably knew Al, and Al did things off, you know, just off his hip, you know. So Rick said to me, look, would you mind waiting? I can run you back, but, you know, 45 minutes, Abe Lemons is coming in. So I said, no, I had known Abe. So we sat around, Abe came, we met Al at the Pfister, and he said, Billy, you're not speaking anymore. You're the MC. Abe's speaking. And that's what we did. So I went to practice and saw him at his best. And from that day on, we just had a great relationship. And he had a, you know, then he came to CBS, as you remember, late in his career. And I felt fortunate to be at his banquet, I think for one of the hospitals, you know, Al's Run or whatever they used to call it. The last, he said, this is it, no more banquets. You know, he just had a way. And then unfortunately, at the end, I got an opportunity to go visit him at the hospice there, and just amazing understanding and insights. I mean, I wish some of my philosophy teachers, and you probably had a lot of philosophy at Marquette, had the insights that he did. He just saw through things and, you know, was succinct in his analysis of stuff. You know, I think anybody that does what we do, you understand that Al, Billy, and Dick really made college basketball for us. You know, those days was only one game a weekend. And all of a sudden, you know, with cable TV and, you know, it spawned the opportunities, countless opportunities for young people aspiring to get into this wonderful field that we're in. But, you know, I was just smiling because there's so many funny nights and funny things that we experienced together.
And to your point, there was a pizza joint at Marquette called Rocky Rococo's. And on the wall, it was just a bunch of McGuire-isms. And it would say things like, once you get your degree, go drive a cab in New York City for a year. Now you're educated. Or it would say, don't eat the chili unless the waitress's ankles are dirty. Like we
dirty. Well, you know what's interesting? Our son Billy, Billy drove a cab, bartended, and I always think of Al. You know, when he up in Nantucket, he bartended and drove a cab, and you know, the one I loved, which I haven't used it, but once in a while, and I always give attribution to Al. You know, a blowout, pass the missiles. Pass the missiles to the side pew, mass is over. I think I'm paraphrasing it somehow, but, you know, what? In other words, this is over. It's a 20-point game. Let's get the heck out of here. Why waste our time announcing this thing, you know? But he was a sweetheart. I mean, I knew Dick well. Dick was so different than Al. Al had a confidence, and I think the players sort of understood that, like, we're going to be tough to beat kind of a deal. And that's the way he was. He was a streety kind of a guy, just, you know, extraordinary competitor. I mean, he saw through things too. You know, when he did the NIT thing, wouldn't go to the NCAA, he challenged them. Of course, they got back at him, not necessarily back at him, but he proved his point. And after that, everybody had to go if you were invited. But of course, now that'll probably go to the Supreme Court again with what's going on now.
When's the first time Bill Raftery said onions? Do you remember?
I and Eagle, we did 8 or 9 years together with the Nets. And he claims it was an Orlando game. And Kevin Edwards was on the Nets, the Paul player, you know. Yeah. In fact, he's on the staff. They're just a great, great guy. And Kevin made a jumper. And the Nets were not very good. They were in the throes of some bad seasons. And who knows, this could have been their 11th win, and maybe they were 11-44. And he took a corner jumper to win the game, a three-pointer. And I just popped it out there. I never said it before, never thought it before. There's not much in it. I always say to people, you can tell I didn't go to Harvard with some of the things I say. But that was the first that anybody can remember, basically.
And when you walk into a gym now, do fans yell, onions? Can you go anywhere without hearing it?
I hear onions. I hear with the kiss. I hear Minutemen, which, and as you know, all of those things were brought about to be succinct and get out of the play-by-play guy's way. Just to, you know, identify the defense and let him identify the people on the floor. But, you know, it's just, I think anything you do on air is because of the family, the friends, not that they said things like you're saying, but the give and take and, you know, the insight into, you know, whether it's being glib or clever or something new, you know, I think that's all part of, you know, what you did their prior years, whether it's grade school, high school, or college.
I always felt bad when you had to do a Syracuse game because they're in the zone. I'm like, you can't just once Boeheim could go man to man just for your sake.
Well, you know, I put that twist on him. You know, Syracuse starts in the 2-3 zone with Minutemen principles. That's the one I did with him. But I was just saying, pass the missiles to the center aisle. Mass is over. That's the one that I used to when I was coaching. I often thought of that when we'd be down by 20. You know, but I couldn't leave.
That is a great McGuire-ism. With the kiss too. Is that one you said as a player when you were shooting and coaching?
No, you know, it was just like just the bank shot didn't get it. You know, I don't know. It's just like the Sam Jones soft feathery delivery. You know, you couldn't bang a bank shot and make it. So it's just one of those things that's popped out. You know, just a little smooch with the kiss. It maybe gives it flavor. But it's really about the soft delivery that these young kids have using the glass, which is, you know, a lot of work, as you well know, to become proficient in that area.
And then send it in, big fella. Do you remember the first time that was uttered?
It's got to be my first year or second year. And it's just, I guess it was probably envy more than anything with these kids as acrobatic and coordinated and playing above the rim. It just made sense, you know. For them, sending it in was pretty easy. For those of us that probably seldom touched the net, it was probably a little jealousy.
I feel like nobody has told more of the late night stories than Jay Billis. He always, well, the legendary nights out before the game with Raftery. I feel like Billis has done more to extend that legend than anyone. What is the night before the game like with Bill Raftery?
Well, he needs help, first of all, Billis. You know, he needs somebody. He's got to sit down on the couch and get analyzed. But I'm just thinking of him in Arizona. My kids see those things. I don't really look at any of that stuff. And Kelly, again, who's with CBS, we're in Arizona, and he sends out, there's a big Bud Light truck, like a trailer truck, and he sends out Raftery's hotel for the Final Four with a picture of the button. That, you know, so he's so clever. And, you know, some of my fondest memories are being with he and Sean McDonough on the Mondays. And but I'll share one story. You know, Mo's up in Milwaukee, and Johnny V and his brother Jamie. And we had a Marquette game, and we all went back to see the football championship, you know, on that Monday night. So I got there last with Danny Gavitt, you know, who's now, you know, the head of the basketball for the NCAA. And Billis was always great with a buck. So when I walked in, I gave Johnny my credit card. And so we've got like six or eight people, and Jay has ordered the wine. Now, he has very good taste, but this was at the point in his life where he should have glasses, but he didn't have them yet. So he ordered the wine, and anyhow, we have a great time, watch the end of the game, and many bottles later, John, we're ready to go. Johnny brought the check over, and I sort of leaned behind Danny, and I look and I go, whoa, like I had a heart attack. What he thought was like 100 was like 400 on the bottle. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me, you know? So he always goes, oh! And I know what he means when he does that. But anyhow, with he and McDonough, we just had, you know, great times on the air with these kids performing extraordinary feats, and just socially too. You know, whether it was Sunday night or Monday night, depending on when we all got in, but, you know, the product was what, excuse me, the product was what carried the show, though. You know, great competition and, you know, terrific coaches. And, of course, the league itself was, as you well know, pretty darn good.
Yeah, and you joked about it with Jim Nantz. Are there guys who will go out and say, man, I can't hang, Coach? How do you do it? Did he really do
it? Well, we're not. I think a lot of it is trumped up, to be honest with you. You know, we all, as you well know, we got the first flight out that Tuesday morning. So you may not look too good. You know, we were probably the only announced staff that arrives in the middle of winter at the Milwaukee airport with sunglasses on, maybe. But other than that, there's no telltale proof. But no, you know, guys, everybody's pretty regular. You know, we usually have a couple of pops, dinner. And, you know, if it's a night game, you know, seldom have more than another hour and a half or so after the game. But I think the whole production crew, which is what we do, we go out together. So it's not just the on-air guys, because we appreciate the people who do all the work and all the preparation and, you know, do everything to make the show and make you feel good or look good.
Well, I imagine the kid from St. Cecilia is living the dream, right? Getting to be around basketball. How would you sum it up? I mean, even for some folks in TV, you get a little older and they usher you aside. I feel like your star is as big now as it's ever been. Can you put it into perspective for me how basketball has turned into your not only your love, your passion, but your living?
Well, you know, just as a kid starting, the Christmas, they would hide a basketball. My folks somehow would hide a ball. So no matter what they gave me, I was disappointed. And somehow out of the corner or behind the couch would come the basketball. And, you know, your dreams get shattered occasionally, whether you get cut or your team doesn't do well, or you don't get the opportunity at whatever level you're aspiring to. And to stay in it, and be this young, by that, you're around young people, and it just gives you a lift, a spirit. I mean, it's very hard to explain to people, but nobody looks at you like you're an old man. They sort of embrace you pretty much as you're part of the whole atmosphere of college basketball. So, yeah, I've been very lucky. I mean, family-wise, extraordinarily lucky. And, of course, to stay in it this long and, you know, reap the rewards. I think I'm the guy that's blessed. I probably put a lot of people to sleep over the years. But anyhow, it's been very good to me, obviously.
All right, so offline, I was texting with him and somebody I know up in Marquette who said, you got to go to a game, maybe one of our road games in the coming seasons, and Raftery and Gus are on the call. He said, we'll meet up at the team hotel the night before for a couple of beers, and Raftery will just hold court. And I'm telling you, you know what, tickets to see the Rolling Stones, a trip to Ireland, a bunch of things you could tell me are coming in the next year or two, and you'd get excited. You'd be counting down the days. This one is right up there. I mean, hanging with Bill Raftery, are you kidding me? So I'm putting that. I've always got a list, things to get to. I'm putting that one near the top of the list. Hope you enjoyed it. Bill Raftery, what a fun guy. Looking forward to hearing him again now that we feel like we know him just a little bit better. And before we got the Zoom going, he was having trouble finding the email, and his son Billy came over and said, Dad, you got your iMessages up. You're not even on email. And then they had a big laugh about it and just seems like a really tight-knit family, no surprise. The Kilcoin Conversation, as always, available on iTunes, Spotify. You can subscribe. That way it's delivered directly to you. We encourage you to do that. Write a review. Tell your friends. That helps us out. And as always, segments are posted at scoopswithdannymac.com. Great website run by the Cardinals broadcaster, Dan McLaughlin. A lot of great daily content on that site. Fun to partner with Dan on all of these projects. As always, our sponsors are Triad Bank, located in Frontenac, also on the web, triadbanking.com. Appliance Discounters, theappliancediscounters.com. Great GE merchandise, GE rebates, appliances delivered within days. Don't wait weeks or months. Check out my friends at Appliance Discounters. And Marie Davila, Senior Living, corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. I always tell you to take that virtual tour. Maybe I should spell it out. It's Marie, MariDeVilla, MarieDavilla.com. I'm Martin Kilcoin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again soon.